Roman Halter, Reel 8.
Yes, people in the Spheres Department realized that the Russians were moving too fast west, and it would be safer to have the factory somewhere in Germany. So some people from the Spheres Department, plus the SS, decided to carry out a selection of sending a group of us, we didn't know how many, to the place where the machines were in order to load them up, clean them, load them up, and pass them on to Germany. So I realized then that the life in Stutthof was so hellish, and also every day they wanted to see who were the fit people to be sent on to Germany to work in the factory, that they took us and made us carry boulders from one area to another under supervision of these psychopaths and criminals, and also SS with dogs. I then knew that if I stay there, I'll be dead. Now, one day in Stutthof, the people who, the 500 who passed through Auschwitz, were also mothers and younger children. But somehow Mengele said the whole 500 had been sent on, so 500 were sent on. For instance, Leon Humovich, who adopted me and his wife, had children under 10, and they were sent on also to Stutthof. And one day we were standing at roll call when SS came and selected the mothers with the younger children, and everybody knew that they were going to be taken away and murdered. And the men whose wives and children were taken away were wailing and stood there at the roll call, because some of the mothers had shouted goodbye across the wire, were close to the woman's block, and it was evident that this selection was such that they are all going to be taken to be guessed. I lost my thread here slightly. The conditions in Stutthof were that at roll call, after roll call, we received a little bit of black liquid. It was called coffee, but it tasted like hot water, dark and warmed up, and a piece of bread which had to last for a day, a little chunk. And the starvation was great. And somehow, I don't know what they gave us for a soup, but it gave us some had dysentery and died. Plus, every day being taken out onto that area, into the field, and carrying boulders from one side, and then the next day carrying from that side back to another side was awful. The SS stood there with dog, and one man had an Alsatian who liked biting people, and he was set up on them. And a man who was from Lodz Ghetto said, what you have to do when he comes to you, when SS doesn't see you, you get hold of him with the right hand behind the head, the dog, and you put your hand in his mouth, very deeply in, and you kick him on the side. He said, if they see you, they'll shoot you, but otherwise he will tear you up. So the dog was sent for me, and I ran over that brow, and I put my hand, you can see the scar here, in that, on this big tooth, and I did this very quickly and kicked him, and he let go and ran back, and he never came for me again. It was quite interesting, and I wasn't seen, because otherwise I would be shot straight away kicking an assessment's dog. That would have been punishable straight away by that. This, I fortunately have a healing wound, and this sort of tore that skin. This balding work, or taking stones from side to side, killed quite a number of people. plus the starvation, plus the beating, irrational beating. Also, Stutthof had many sadistic homosexuals, and one had to guard oneself against them.
You would have been very vulnerable, wouldn't you?
Yes, I was once taken by two homosexuals to their block, and they just had, one brought some food, and he said, go up on the bunk and warm it up. So I said, may I go to the toilet first? So I went to the toilet, disappeared. I always made it a point to be absolutely on the lookout, like a bird, to see whether I could see them anywhere. And so when the selection came to select some people to send to clean the machines, we were told that we mustn't say a word. We just have to come up, stop, and look at the selection committee. And there was Charnula, who was liaising then in Lodz Ghetto together with people from Spears department. And then there says on the side that if we speak, we'll be instantly murdered or killed. And when it came to my turn, I thought, I'll take a chance. I said, I have very dexterous hands. Please, could I be taken? And there says, lifted his butt, was just about to crush my skull. When the man from the Spear department said, no, like that. Right, we'll take you. And so did Charnula, sort of said to the SS. And I was taken. And when we went there to load up the machine, I was oiling the sections. And there were sort of around 30 of us who did it. There was Nussbaum, who after work used to play Mozart on his comb. And he knew many languages. And SS were cordoned off by a wooden wall. And when they played their radio, he could listen in and he could understand other station which they played. And then I was made as a cleaner of the block, which was very nice. And the woman who was the German foreman's wife, a big corpulent woman, whether she was wife or his girlfriend, I don't know, when the husband went to supervise the loading of the machine, all the young SS used to visit her one after another and said that she had a sort of insatiable sexual appetite. And she used to pour out the sardine oil in a little cup outside, and I would drink it, and it really revived me. Oh, my body needed it. And I used to clean her place, and sometimes I used to get the rinds from bread, so that was an extra bonus. That really, the few weeks that we were loading up the machines, helped me enormously. Then one day, Charnula and somebody else from Spears department arrive to find whether everything is going well. And I was chosen to carry some coal into a flat there, very near to where the factory was supposed to be. And I took it there with them, without SS supervision, which was quite unheard of. And they went out for a walk, and I had to heat up a big sort of oven in the corner. It had so much space on either side, about 6-7 inches. So I made this fire and became quite warm. And I was afraid that if an SS came and found me there, I would be taken out and shot. So I crawled into that space behind the oven. And because of the heat, I fell asleep. When they came back, I heard voices. And then I came out, and I was quite dirty and dusty because there was behind this oven wasn't clean. It was just enough space, I don't know, 9 inches. And so they all burst out laughing because I came out like a chimney sweep, and they were quite positive that I ran away and they would be responsible for me. So this man later on in Dresden became one of the sort of head of the Spears department's office, who was also there, and he laughed, and they said, what's your name? So I said, Roman. So they said, oh, we'll see you, Roman. When we come to the next factory in Germany, we'll make you a Laufer. A Laufer is a runner. I didn't know what that meant then. Anyway, one of them took me back And he said, it's quite all right, because the head of SS knows that we took you and you brought the call. This was a sort of incident which was, again, something which was a cornerstone of to my survival. We then were loaded up. But before we were loaded up, they found that something like over 130 were dead from our group of 500. So they requested that Auschwitz should make up that 500, and so many men, so many women arrived. Eventually, when we were transported back, we were 216 men, 284 women, and we were sent to Dresden. And that was on the 23rd of November, 1944. And we were sent to 68 Schandauer Straße in Dresden. Before, this Schandauer Straße building was part of a cigarette factory. Behind us was this main part of the cigarette factory. And all the machines were there by the time we arrived. It was a question of installing them, of just making certain that they all run properly. And we were set to work in Dresden. And we slept in the same building. The machine were in the basement. And we were about there. And I was then working on a lathe. And then after a while I was transferred to making, cleaning out the dies for pressing out the tips of bullets. The die was out of steel, which was hardened, and the hole was right in the center and had to be shaped bullet part. And because I had experiences beginning at the engraving department, I could do the work very well. We had a prototype, and then we had to press in like plasticine to see whether it matches the prototype, and then file it there and clean it. It wasn't a very sophisticated way of working, but it was effective. And then the wire, which was pressed out, was put in a drum, and the drums were rotating in order to make it look like polished. And then these were sent to Leipzig to be assembled into bullets of various sizes. So there were certain millimeter sizes that had to fit the tubes of a bullet where explosive were put into the tube, and then the tip were put on top. And we were constantly under SS supervision. And the SS really could do anything with us. That was, if they decided to beat somebody or shoot somebody, they did not have to ask permission. It was up to the officer in charge, and he could carry out all this. Suddenly we had a change of an officer in charge, and one day he decided in winter, snow was on the ground, that he would take us to adjoining area, it was a sort of compound, for a little walk, so that we get some fresh air. That was quite unheard of, because we came back with red cheeks. We never experienced fresh air. We were always cooked up in this place with the windows whitened out. And our ration there became a little bit better than in Stutthof. And we were totally isolated from the world or from population. Some people who were selected in order to bring the ration into the place, and they had a cart, and so many were in front pulling the cart, so many back pushing the cart. And they were the very privileged people, because when they went to get bread or potatoes or whatever it was, they could also, what one called it then, organize a certain amount for themselves. So they looked better than we did. And some of them managed to sort of beg a little bit more from the baker, or get naturally a little bit more. And they used to come and say what Dresden looked like. I remembered that when they took us, after we arrived to Dresden from Stutthof, what a wonderful place it was. And when I walked, I thought, when I survive, because I always remember my grandfather said, you will survive when you survive. When I survive, I would like to become an architect and build beautiful buildings, because this beauty really absolutely amazed me. Because as a child in Chodesh, the only place I went to was Włocławek, when my brother Szlamek lived, and Brześć Kujawski, where my sister lived with the two children. I did not complete the story about my sister and Eva, but if I can come back to Lodz Ghetto just for a minute, my sister Sala from Brześć Kujawski with the two children felt that she would do very well if she worked in the place where uniforms and shirt of SS and other soldiers were being washed and repaired. But the work was so terribly hard, and although they received a little bit of better ration, she found it was terribly exhausting. And one day she came home, and her boy, who was then coming on to seven, broke into that cupboard where they had the ration for the week and ate it all. It was a tremendous tragedy, because it meant going on for so many days without food, and she had from that soup that she received to share with them. And like my mother, they were also taken in 42 during the Czpera, where everybody was taken to Chełmno extermination camp. Eva was in Lodz Ghetto to the very end. She was sent on transport before our metal factory was sent. And I lost touch with her. Now that we were in Dresden, our existence was very much the same every day. We had to, the factory worked around the clock, so many shifts. The machine had to be kept going. And we worked in isolation, except those who went to collect food and bring it back. All the time we had Achtung, Achtung, Luftwaffe Meldung, where RAF used to fly over. Till 13th of February, they said that they are going to fly to Leipzig or other places, but suddenly the bombs started falling, and quickly the chief SS, the officers there, decided to go to a bunker, and the ordinary SS were guarding us in the basement area where the machines were. And 68 Schandauerstrasse received only incendiary bombs. The first sortie came with with heavy bombs, and that missed us. And then the incendiary bombs were dropped on top of the heavy bombs, and fire started. And we looked through the grills in the window, and they were like prison bars, and we could see flares up on top. The whole city was lit up, and we thought that parachutists are coming down. And really, in our way, we were rejoicing. And those people who used to go to get food saying, well, we are not surprised, because most of the Dresden is full of factories making ammunition. And I'm sure that whoever is dropping the bombs knows about it in order to finish off the war. That was the sensible way of doing, coming and bombing Dresden. These ordinary SS didn't know what to do. For instance, the incendiary started burning the roof. The Krankhaus, the sick bay, was on top of the roof in a sort of Nissen hut, and that started burning. And the people who were ill were screaming. So Chimowicz, who was by far the most astute, said to the SS, if you are here any longer, you will die, and will die, because the burning will eventually envelop us. The only sensible thing to do is don't wait for your officers. Just take yourself off together with us and take us all to the river, to the Elbe, the lowest point of Dresden, where the river is, and find a big ground, and then come and search for your officers. And he said to us, everybody takes his blanket, because that was our possession in addition to the stripes that we wore. Cut two holes in the blanket where your eyes are going to be and wet the blanket. So we did that. And the SS led us through these tremendous balls of fire, and it was really like cartwheels coming towards us. And when they came towards us, we threw the blanket over us. The wet blankets lay down on the ground, and the cartwheel would go through us. The SS, who didn't have the blankets, used to have their hair and their eyebrows, everything strange, to such an extent, eventually they tore the blankets from some of us in order to protect themselves. And we came to certain roads where we couldn't pass because the fires were so enormous. So we had to double back and choose another one, and eventually we managed to get down to the Elbe. And we were put in groups and guarded by these SS. Some other SS went back in order to look for their officers. Some of the officers came back, others didn't. I don't know what happened, whether it was a direct hit on their bunker where they were, or whether they escaped. The following day, we were still kept by the Elbe, and the following day, the Americans came to bomb Dresden. And they were terribly high. They dropped the bombs anywhere, and we could see these silver stars in the sky, their aeroplanes, just tremendous height, dropping bombs. But we don't know where the bombs were falling, where they dropped them. But the RAF were terribly accurate. And they did exactly according to plan, and they started right in the center and went into this sort of spiral way of bombing. So very little of the main center was left. The whole thing started from right from the Marikirche, or the center area of Dresden.
What you were saying, Roman, there was a lot of sort of ammunition, a lot of factories in that area.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because often that's not known, is it?
No, it isn't, no. But I think really what happened was that Speer and Hitler thought that the British and the Americans who did the main bombing of Dresden are not going to bomb Dresden, and therefore it was safe in order to transfer the main industries to areas which were not touched, because up to the 13th of February 45, Dresden was untouched. And so most of the places were converted into factories, and according to the people who went for food, saying that there were lots and lots of slave labor who were not Jewish, who were used for war production in Dresden. They were not necessarily under SS guards, but ordinary Wehrmacht guards or Speer's department guards, but the place was full of factories. This is only something that I can repeat what my colleagues told me who were with me. Now, when we were by the Elbe, after the Americans bombed the following day, the SS decided to take us back to the factory and make us repair the damage. The burnt part were extinguished. The place was flooded by the hoses that had extinguished the fire. And we had to pump out the water and clean the machines. As the rest of the workers were taken to Pirnau. Now, Pirnau had this extraordinary place called Sonnenheim, which was first used for euthanasia in the 30s. And the SS carried out a selection and thought that a number from our workers were not fitted, suitable for further work, so there were guests there. This was a pre 1939 crematorium, an area for doing away with disabled, handicapped, and mentally ill, and other people. That was eventually stopped, and people like Stengel, Franz Stengel, were transferred to Treblinka and other places for more major extermination of people.
And the name was Sonne.
Sonnenheim, the sunny home, or something like that. And I have a colleague here called Jacob Bayer, who's my age. His mother and father were also metal workers in Dresden, and they were murdered in Pernau, many other ones. Again, because of my dexterity, I was selected to clean the machines in the factory after the bombing, together with so many people. And others were taken to collect the dead in Dresden and put them in mass graves. One man in charge of the collection, there were three or four groups, was Steyer, who later escaped and was hidden also by Mrs. Fuchs. We in the factory worked there very hard cleaning when one day from Pirnau the lorry with the SS came. We were under SS in the factory, but other SS came with a more high-ranking officer and selected 12 of us and put us against the wall to be shot. And usually before shooting, one person was brutalized. And this is the time when, as we came down the steps of 68 Schandauerstrasse, I could see that the high-ranking officer pointed to an SS at me, and he took the rifle, turned it upside down, and was just about to crush my skull when the person next to me, Steyer, said, Richter, that's this sort of Yiddish word, move quickly, you know, slide down. So I slid down to the next step, and the butt of the rifle came down along my back and landed on my hip, and I thought my hip was broken on the side. The pain was excruciating. And because we're taking down some men and some women, the SS women stood also there to make this corridor through which we passed. So one SS woman pulled me by the arm, and she had a key to opening the window in her hand, which stuck out here, and she hit me on the side of the head, and that produced a tremendous gush of blood. The hole was very small, but the blood was enormous, and I looked very impressive with this blood gushing down my face. And that seemed to satisfy them, because I groaned from the hit on my back. And we were put against the wall, hands up, and to every one of us there was one SS with a rifle at so many paces. And we stood there for some time. And then we were taken back into the factory, not being shot. What happened was is that the Spears department people were asked to procure cigarettes from the factory next door for the SS. If not, they are going to shoot us. So the man who was in charge of the factory went over to the factory area and managed to get some cigarettes for the SS and gave it to this officer, so we were brought back. We're as dispensable as that, you know, so many packets of cigarettes were sufficient to shoot us, not to shoot us. And I recovered from both the bleeding and the pain on my side. Nothing was broken, just badly bruised. It took me so many days, and I was all right again.
Do you think that was it, though? You know, being lined up with your own personal gun pointed at you. Did you really feel that you might be shot? And
oh yes, because I was preoccupied with the pain, and I was groaning. And some other one said, "Stop groaning," because you might irritate them and they will shoot us. So I had suppressed sobs. But each of us knew that that was the end. But then, all the time, when a day passed and you were alive, although I wasn't very religious, because I believed in the prayers that I was taught by my grandfather that good people are rewarded by goodness. I could not believe this anymore. So yet the belief in God was great, and one felt that one wanted to thank God for allowing one to survive another day. So it became very private. And I usually used to summon sort of members of my family before me, before going to sleep, and have a sort of quiet communion with them, and to think that so many hours passed and I am still alive. One was aware that death was constantly around the corner, that you were so dispensable to the Germans. And whilst we were standing against the wall, a crowd gathered of Germans outside, because we